quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
This is Stuart Venner. I tell it as I see it, and I see it as it is.
It was interesting, but it was also stupid.
This is Stuart Venner. I want to welcome you to this week's show. We've got a really great lineup of guests in store. We're speaking to Eugene Conrad. Eugene is a man who has started an Alzheimer's support group for men whose wives are suffering with that disease. We're speaking to James Lowe, otherwise known as the Jiggy Jaguar. He's a longtime radio personality, and we're going to talk about changes in the media. We're talking to Linda Culbreth. Linda has written a book about bullies, and we're going to talk about how bullying affects teenagers and all of us, for that matter. We're talking to Scott Middick. Scott Middick is with Equifax and is going to talk about protecting your ID online, especially important for young people that are going to be looking for their first jobs. We're talking to Alana Lee. That's going to be an interview by Jason Dowd. Alana is an up-and-coming pop star artist, and you're going to really enjoy her singing and what she has to say. Thank you. I know you're going to enjoy it. Please stay tuned.
Bananas, bananas. Bananas, 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 bananas.
I have a very interesting and important guest online. We're speaking to Dr. Eugene Conrad. Dr. Conrad leads two men's Alzheimer's disease caregiver support groups, and he's very, very involved in the whole Alzheimer's illness and support from the caregivers. Dr. Conrad, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I know Alzheimer's is pretty much becoming epidemic proportion, isn't it?
It sure is.
And people that have this, they're not bananas. They just don't remember anything.
That's right. There are over 5 million in the United States and 70,000 in our small state of Connecticut.
My goodness, that's a lot of people for a small state like that. And
it
tell
sure
me,
is.
How did you get involved in such a thing?
Well, about 10 years ago, I purchased the car for my wife, and I was surprised she didn't want to test drive it. And that kind of rang a bell. And several years later, about 7 years ago, it turned out she was having problems with her memory. And so that got me involved in getting her diagnosed as having probable Alzheimer's disease. And as I became a caregiver, I, of course, attended caregiver support groups. And they were mainly run by women, social workers, female social workers.
Uh-huh.
And I found that the few men who attended either had little time left to talk or were very hesitant to talk about their problems. So I said there must be a better way of doing this. And in 2010, I made an announcement at the senior men's group here in Stanford that I am a member of, that I was starting a support group. So I enrolled two members of the Senior Men's Association and then recruited a third member. And I figured I needed three members to have a support group meeting. And in due course, we had a lot of support from local people, particularly our pastor of the church and the local newspaper. So by 2012, we had 13 members. And that led me to divide the group into two subgroups. And we meet twice monthly for 1 hour. And so I have the group with me. Done that, I then became very, very much interested in searching the literature about how to become a good caregiver.
Are you a medical doctor yourself?
I have most of my training at the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine, even though I have a PhD.
Okay.
And so later I got an MPH, a Master's in Public Health, and that got me really interested in medicine in general and, of course, in public health.
You know, it's got to be very hard for the caregiver. I think probably harder for the caregiver than the person who actually has the disease, because they probably don't remember
what's going on. But it's like Alkanon for a narcotic, or Al-Anon for a the caregiver for an alcoholic. It's pretty hard for the caregiver, really.
It's very frustrating for the caregiver. However, if the caregiver learns more about the disease, it'll become less frustrating. And there are positive aspects of being a caregiver. The main one is that you're doing something really noble for another person.
Yes, you are.
Sure, it's frustrating. And I, from my reading and also listening to the men in the support group, and my own support group, I also belong to a support group. So applying all of that information, I decided that one thing I could do is develop a one-page handout for the members who attend the meetings. So I've prepared 30 such handouts, ranging in many, many different areas: nutrition, cooking, and more lately, guilt feeling when you're taking care of somebody else.
You know, what I noticed, the exposure I've seen to people with Alzheimer's, it appears that their personalities with Alzheimer's are about the opposite of what they were when they were normal and didn't have the disease. In other words, people that were nice become really mean, and people that were mean become nice. I noticed this.
That's a very important point. A good caregiver recalls how the person who was demented was when they were healthy, and capitalizes on those aspects of the personality. And that makes it a lot easier. And of course, most patients with dementia say very little, so it's important to watch the body language and respond that way. And it's also important to do things with the person that's receiving the care: eating together, singing together, dancing, going to movies, all of
that's
that
wonderful.
Because the person who has dementia feels abandoned, and it's very important to keep that in mind.
Sometimes they remember things a long time ago, they just don't remember what happened in the last couple minutes.
Exactly. And in that respect, it's important to try to recall for the person the memorable experiences. For example, my wife Reva loves music, and when she was a teenager, she would listen to popular music every evening on the radio. So we capitalize on that. We have a lot of music in our home, not only popular music, but also classical music to satisfy her wishes.
And she probably remembers all the old songs.
That's right. And at daycare, she goes to daycare 4 days a week. Every day they have music and sing-along. So she just delighted to go to daycare, and when she comes home, she's as happy as a lark.
That is wonderful. You know, you noticed when you mentioned that you got her a car when you first noticed this. I live in Florida, which has no shortage of old people, and they have things across the highways where they put out alerts, you know, of accidents or highway problems, but they have a thing called a silver alert where there's some person with dementia driving around with no idea of where they are.
That's an important problem, and I was fortunate because Reva recognized that in the beginning when she did not want to test drive the car.
Very astute.
And she drove a little bit after that, but then on her own just stopped driving. She's a retired nurse who has psychiatric experience, so she was quite familiar with what was going on, and to my amazement, she applied it to herself.
Dr. Conrad, are there any medicines or breakthroughs or anything that's really helping cure or arrest this?
That's a good question. The current researchers would like to catch the symptoms as early as possible. And in that case, they would like to administer a drug to prevent Alzheimer's. Well, that's a long way off. Currently, there are several medications that are available. Some are given by mouth, some are given as a patch, and the best one is Aricept, which is the oldest one. It's been available for a good number of years. And the other is Namenda, which is newer and used probably less frequently. Those two medications are probably the main ones that we have now not to prevent or to eradicate Alzheimer's, but to extend the life of the individual. That's the main reason why the medicines are being given. In addition to the anti-Alzheimer's disease medications, many patients receive a antidepressant because many times they're very depressed, and by having the antidepressant, the patient is easier to manage, their behavior is modulated better, and consequently, those are the three medicines that are used quite often.
And I remember a number of years ago, sometimes it can be a little bit humorous if you're watching, but I was at a wedding for a relative, and the night before the wedding, we were at the bride's family's home, and there were two relatives of ours, and they were two very old men that both had Alzheimer's, and they were sitting there, and I was watching this, and one turned to the other and says, "Where are we?" The other one says, "How the hell do I know?"
Well, genetics accounts for a small percentage of the individuals who have Alzheimer's disease. But sure enough, our two daughters are concerned about developing Alzheimer's because my wife has Alzheimer's disease. My wife had participated in a clinical study where she had a DNA analysis. However, the investigator did not want to share that information with me.
Well, Dr. Conrad, before we wrap this up, can you tell everyone how they can contact you or learn more about this? Because you're doing marvelous work.
Yes, what I'd like to close with are a few items from my article called Savvy Caregiving. Become a good patient listener. Recall change in behavior represents the illness, not the person. Focus more on body language. Recall the personality and preferences of the person before illness. Plan ahead and expect the need to adapt to change. Avoid burnout by taking care of yourself. Make personal time using daycare and other help.
Keep and I think it's most important to find a support group like yourself so you can share these problems and not be alone.
Okay, that's a good point. We have 3 male support groups in our state of Connecticut, and there are some 30 others in the United States. But this is a small number compared to the number of co-ed support groups.
Dr. Conrad, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Get a handle on it. You Google, you blog, you tweet. cause you're hooked on it. Boss ain't ready.
Ready.
How you gonna help him see? Social media, it's him. It's even addicting. It's hot, it's cool. It delivers top-notch search placement. I kinda like it. Social media's the bomb. There goes my phone again. It's a Facebook suggestion. Do you wanna add a friend? Add a page, become a fan. Did I really used to date that girl? No way. I got the fail whale. Oh no. What's up with the Twitter server? What are you doing? Update. Because I can't survive without my followers. I want a million. Like Ashton Kutcher. I've got a YouTube channel for me and for my job. I post the videos online and I'm hoping someday they'll go viral. What's my rating? Please won't you give me 5 stars. And my LinkedIn profile, I post an update all the while, trying to build my connections. I take a poll and join a group, and I get top search placement. It's all about the search, baby. I've got a new blog for my dog. I write as if I'm on all four. I catch a frisbee and do tricks. Then I go to Flickr and I post the pics. I got a wedding. I can even post still on Flickr. Crazy little thing, the web. Crazy little thing, this web. Crazy little thing, the web.
Welcome back to the show. I've got a good friend and a great guest on the line. We're speaking to James Lowe, otherwise known as Jiggy Jaguar. James has had many, many years of experience as a radio broadcaster himself, and he's an expert on media, and we want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the media today. James, welcome to the show.
I'll tell you, you are fabulous, my friend. You are a great host.
Well, I can say the same thing about you. I love being on your show. But, you know, what I was thinking, you know, the media, it's so much media today. There's social media, there's radio, there's television,
yeah.
And we get a lot of misinformation, don't we?
Very much so. There is a ton of options, a ton of resources, a ton of different things out there for people to get their hands on, and it seems to me that if you don't pay attention, you don't well research things, you can get trapped into a bunch of BS.
That's so sure. You know, this morning on the news, I'm listening, and Nancy Pelosi is saying how Obama has cut the budget in half.
Okay.
And people are listening to that, and some people are believing it.
I am absolutely amazed that that people would pick up on something like that.
And this is what we're exposed to. You know, anybody can post anything today.
Well, yeah, people post things all over. They use social media to further their message. There's a lot of people out there that say, "Oh, I have a radio station," and they don't, or they say they have call letters, but they're made up. Or you have people who have legitimate news sites, and they look legitimate, but they're not. There's a lot of, and it's not just on the left; it's on the right. There's a ton of different news sources and a lot of organizations that try to sway people's views one way or another. So yes, there's a lot of options, and people will believe a lot of crap.
That's for sure. You know, people tend to be believers.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of human nature, and
they want to believe.
Yeah, they're not skeptical, and that's what makes religion.
Yes, you hit that right on the head.
You know, so people want to believe, but you've got to really be careful today, isn't that right?
Yeah, you've got to be very careful. There's a lot of, I guess, misinformation, if you want to use that term. There's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of people that seem to think that they have all the various, you know, facts to back up their stories, and 90% of the time, it's very hard to determine what is a legitimate news source, what is not a legitimate news source. Then you get into situations where you have folks who will take other pieces of news that are legitimate, post them on their site or link to them, and then they all of a sudden become legitimate in certain people's eyes, and it's very hard to cut through the clutter.
That's for sure. And then a lot of these people end up teaching our kids in the schools, which is really scary.
Yeah. They do. They end up becoming somehow teachers, or they end up becoming mentors to youth. Yes, it's a very, I guess, strange situation, if you want to use that term.
So what do you suggest that people can do? I mean, what is the best sources? Where should they look, and what should they look for?
My theory has always been, if you do enough research on your own, you will be able to find various sources and be able to make things work. And it's just an odd situation, because you've got so much stuff going on. You've got social media, you've got websites, you've got Facebook pages, you've got Twitter sites, you've got all these things. And if you don't do good enough research, you can get trapped into all sorts of shenanigans. And my advice, I guess, on that, Stuart, would be just do your research, man.
Oh, I agree with you there. I myself read about 4 or 5 newspapers a day, and I like Reuters. I think they're pretty good.
Yeah, they seem to be on top of their game.
You know, I also enjoy reading, I get a good perspective. I read the Jerusalem Post every day.
Wow.
And you kind of, it's in English, and you kind of get a lot of different perspective of what's really going on over there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and see, that's the thing, is that if you've got to have various, you've got to have various sources, because if you just stick with one, that's why there's a lot of times that people who watch MSNBC also watch Fox, or people who read the Washington Times, also read some of the other various sources out there, or if they're reading the left-leaning blogs, they read the right-leaning blogs. And I find myself sometimes thinking it's very comedic, because both sites and both three sources, a lot of times, whether it be right or left, you can tell where they're slanted. And they take one story and they slant it a certain way, and depending on who is, you know, who is paying attention, and a lot of times people just stick with one source, so they get one view of the news and information.
That's so true. James, my friend, can you tell everyone how people can hear the Jiggy Jaguar show? And
they can get a hold of us at jiggyjaguar.com. That's JIGGYJAGUAR.com. And we have a 24/7 audio stream. We are live daily from 2 Central, 3 Eastern, and 12 p.m. Pacific. But if you happen to miss the show and want to catch it live, we have a player right on our website. We also have podcasting set up as well, and you can download the RSS right to, you know, whatever device you want to listen to. We're also available on all the different apps, whether it be TuneIn or Radio Loyalty. So there is no reason not to hear all my nonsense each and every day for 3 hours in the afternoon.
Well, I highly recommend everyone go listen to the Jiggy Jaguar show, and especially Fridays about 4:45 Eastern time, because I'm on.
for whatever reason, on Fridays, around the 45 minute mark to the top of the hour, you make an appearance, and I will have to say it is probably one of the funnest segments on Friday, because you, as I said many times before, you make the complex understandable.
Well, James, thank you so much for coming on my little show, and I really do appreciate it.
Definitely. I appreciate being on the program. You have just an amazing mass of stations and a great fan following. I think it's an honor to be on, and thanks for having me on today, Stuart.
Thank you, my friend. Have a great day.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Welcome back to the show. I've got a very interesting guest online, Linda Culbreth. Linda has written a book. In fact, she's written a lot of books. But she's the book we're going to talk about right now is Bullies Plus Teen Dating Equals Bullying. And I think that's a pretty serious matter today. We hear a lot about it. Linda, thank you, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Stuart. And I'm very happy to be here on the show.
Oh, it's really my pleasure to have you on. You've actually been a survivor of bullying and of a pretty abusive marriage yourself, haven't you?
Yes, I was. It was actually my high school sweetheart that I met, fell in love with, and married. And it wasn't but just a little bit into the marriage that the abuse became very, very bad. He even was arrested. There were some red warning flags that I didn't see, didn't know about, didn't think it could happen to me, and then it became very, very critical. We were actually divorced 1 week to the and a year to the wedding date, and since then he's gone on to abuse three other wives, has sexually assaulted a three-year-old little girl, and is on the sexual offenders list.
Oh my God, he sounds like a horrible person. Do you want to share how you were abused or not? You don't have to if you don't want to.
I can do that. I would like to share one thing that was abusive. While we were dating, we met at one of the malls there in Houston, Texas. This is where I lived at the time. We were going to spend the afternoon together and then go to a movie. And I was waiting around the fountain where we were supposed to meet. And he came up behind me and grabbed me by the throat and choked me and said that he was just playing. But the truth is that it took 2 weeks for me to get my voice back.
Oh, my God. So he really hurt you.
So he really hurt me, and I did not know that that was, you know, that was going to be a foretaste of what was coming later. He spoke often about, when he was younger, abusing animals and even killing some of them, and it struck me as very odd. I didn't grow up in that kind of a family at all, of abusive relationships.
Well,
but
he's really kind of a sociopath.
He's something, but he's very dangerous. I know that any time I'm in Texas, I check on the sexual offender list to see, is he in jail or is he out of jail, so that I know where to avoid him.
Well, I myself, I'm not a sexual offender, but I've been accused of being sexually offensive.
Well, there's a difference. There's a big difference there.
I know that. Linda, what, you know, obviously, I think if someone comes up and tries to choke you, that's a pretty good warning sign. But what are some of the other warning signs that teenagers and, you know, adults, too, should look out for?
Well, there's several things that are warning flag signs that I think of. If that you're already in an abusive relationship, and some of them are questions here, is one a partner afraid of the other? Are you afraid to break up with the other? Are you afraid they're going to hurt you if you do break up? Does one partner call the other one's names, whether it's names that are demeaning like fatty or skinny or to make you feel stupid? Or do they tell somebody that you can't do anything right? Is one partner really extremely jealous? And it's okay to be jealous. I mean, everybody gets jealous, but that doesn't make you abusive. But when you're extremely possessed by jealousy, that's a real good sign that somebody's going to be abusive. Does one partner tell the other where they can go, who they can go with? You can't go with family, you can't go with friends, isolate you and tell you, you know, who you can talk to, who you can't. And does one partner say things like, you know, nobody else wants you, nobody else will have you. And
so very demeaning, and that's a warning sign.
That is a big warning sign, because that is like the verbal part of it that can escalate on into the physical and the sexual. And, of course, the verbal, the emotional and psychological abuse are just as damaging, maybe not as evident to other people, but they're very damaging just as well.
Now, the book you wrote, it's called Bullies, right?
Bullies plus Teen Dating Equals Bullying.
Okay.
That's the complete title of it. Because you take a bully and put him into a teen dating relationship, and it can be even a very young teen that, you know, 11, 12, 13 years old. They maybe meet at the mall, or they don't necessarily have to go out on a date for it to be a bully relationship, but it's very explosive.
So this is pretty important for teenagers and parents to read, I would think.
If the parents don't understand that it's actually going on, then they can't do anything about it. And if they think that it's not an issue, particularly with their teen, you've got two sets of parents here, Stuart. You've got the parent of the abuser, but then you've got the parent of the abuse. So you've got both of them.
And you might have a parent who's an abuser himself, and maybe the kids are just following in their footsteps.
That is a very, very good point, and it is so true. There could be a pattern that this is the only way somebody knows how to act and how to behave.
That's right. That's like alcoholics typically come from an alcoholic family, because that's what they've learned.
They don't know any other pattern.
That's all they know. That's right. Yeah. And an abuser, probably all he ever learned was being abused and seeing a parent be an abuser. Very interesting.
And sometimes we think that the abuser's only the guys, and that's wrong. I talked with a teenager at a high school on the north side of Houston, Texas. He was one of these students that they had to check in to the counselor's office between classes because he tended to skip a few of them. Mm. And he was in there, and I was talking with the counselor because an upcoming forum on date abuse, well, relationship abuse was going on, and I was going to be a part of it. And I talked to him, and he looked like one of these guys that could play football, big, you know, but a little bit on the
yes.
lazy side, so he'd never do the running and work to do that. And there was this little girl, a teenager, but she was tiny. She probably didn't even weigh 100 pounds, that was real loud and boisterous, and she was outside the door waiting, and she saw it, and I said, "Who is that?" And the counselor, after the young man left, said, "Oh, that is his girlfriend, and she's bad news for him." Well, about a week later, I was back in the office, and I saw that young man, and this time he's got a cast on his right arm because that young lady had broke his arm because she got mad at him.
Wow, that's really something. Linda, can you tell everyone how to get hold of your book and how to buy it? I mean, I think it's really interesting.
Sure. The book is available in all the EMATs, I mean, the e-book formats, so that you can use it on any reading device, whether it's Kindle or Nook or any of the rest of them, or even on your computer. And you can get it at my website, which is www.bookdesignedbylinda.com.
Okay.
And I even have a 50-cent coupon off on it that you can put the coupon code in once you click on the book and go through the process.
Well, I think everyone, especially if you have kids, should get this book. And you should read it, and your kids should read it. Again, we're talking to Linda Culbreth, and her website is www.bookdesignedbylinda.com. And again, the book is Bullies Plus Teen Dating Equals Bullying, and I think that's pretty true. Linda, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Welcome back to the show. We're speaking to Scott Middick. Scott has got quite a resume. He's Senior Vice President right now of Equifax Personal Solutions, and he was actually the CEO of Trusted ID, which I think is now part of Equifax. Right, Scott?
That's correct. We were acquired earlier this summer.
And what we're going to talk about is really how people have to protect their online reputation, especially college kids today that are going to be going out into the workplace. It's a lot of danger out there, isn't it?
It sure is. I mean, there are about 15 million people a year in the United States who are victims of identity theft, which is certainly one flavor of the problem. But even more concerning is the damage that young people can do to their reputations when they make poor mistakes at an early stage in their career, and it follows them for the rest of their online and offline lives.
when you post something, it's there forever, isn't it?
It never goes away. Google indexes it. Hundreds of other companies index it, take snapshots, and you need to assume that anything you put on the internet will one day, in one way, become public and be seen by people that you may not today expect are going to be looking at it.
So if you went out on that party and you smoked a little pot and then you put it on Facebook, that could keep you from getting a job, couldn't it?
It absolutely could. Today, employers are frequently checking social profiles, checking online to discover what they can about a person. And it only makes sense if you're trying to get a good snapshot of what a person is like in real life. You want to go beyond their resume. In the old days, we used to do reference checks. Today, we do Google checks. And what is there when that information gets pulled out of the internet is what's there. And it's much easier to be someone who prohibits and guards against bad stuff getting there in the first place than it is to clean it up after the fact.
Is there a way to clean it up?
There really, in some cases, is, and in other cases, are not. I mean, there are, if you put a picture on Facebook, you can, of course, remove that picture from Facebook. What you don't know is what's happened to that picture in between the time that you posted it and took it down. And it may be as simple as a friend taking a download of that picture or a screenshot of that picture. But if the picture has been shared publicly on a service like Facebook, it's very likely that Google has crawled it and has indexed it and archived it. And, you know, there it will live for something close to eternity.
You know, I think if I am right about this, you would know this. I think when you post something on Facebook, that actually belongs to Facebook. You've given up the proprietary rights to that posting.
Well, it is true that it becomes copyrighted material that is that Facebook has the rights to display, and it gets into a complex area of intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
The simple rule for folks like you and I who are just trying to do the right thing and prevent problems down the path is to not post pictures or any other material or content which you don't want to publicly share.
Unless you're stupid like Anthony Weiner.
Exactly. we all have our challenges in life, some more than others. But, you know, even if you are thinking that you're sharing something with a small group, you have to assume that over time, more than the people that you intend are going to end up seeing that picture. It's just the only way to comport oneself in this online digital world in which we live today.
I think that's so true. And, you know, the who's your friend today might not be your friend tomorrow.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Scott, tell us a little bit about what you're doing now.
Well, Equifax is the United States' largest credit bureau, and we have data on most U.S. consumers that help us understand what is changing in your identity. And so we are able to help alert consumers when there are things that are changing in their background or in their credit profile, which may indicate a risk of identity theft. We also obviously have a lot of information that lenders use to determine the risk associated with lending you money. And from that comes the credit score and comes your credit report, both of which are, you know, really important underpinnings of the U.S. economy today.
I'm personally not a great lover of credit scoring. You know, I was in the mortgage business for many years. And when the FICO came out, the Fair Isaac, I know you were involved with that. But it sure took away any common sense mortgage underwriting.
It's not a perfect model, but you have to remember that before credit scores, in the old days, you used to go and sit down in front of your neighborhood banker, and you used to say, I'd like a loan. And the banker would look at you, and depending on how you looked, or potentially what the color of your skin was, or how you spoke, would make a decision that was in many cases arbitrary about the risk associated with lending you money. The great revolution that occurred with credit scores is that there's now a factual basis upon which to determine whether or not someone is likely to repay a loan that they have borrowed from a bank. And while not perfect, it is certainly an improvement in terms of helping a lender make a fair and equitable decision about their lending practices. And, you know, many would claim has been a really important driver for economic growth across the United States for, you know, decades and decades, although the excess of perhaps the last 5 years might show some of the downside of free and easy credit, but there's certainly been a lot of good that's come from it as well.
Well, I had a man come to me a number of years ago, that was trying to get out of 5 properties that he owned in Sacramento, California. And he drove a pickup truck, didn't speak English, which I had to think might be a slight earning disability, pulled a lawnmower behind his truck, and he owned 5 houses with loans of about $500,000 each. So I don't know how he got it, but he did.
I think those days are over, at least for now.
I hope so. Scott, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and I think everyone has to really take heed of this, especially if you're a young person and you're in college. It's so easy to make that mistake, and it really can ruin your life.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
All right, everybody, that was Dream Out Loud, and we're here with the singer today, Alana Lee. Alana is a 16-year-old teen pop sensation. Alana's Dream Out Loud and Perfect Storm both are now available on iTunes and on other major online music retailers. Dream Out Loud is nominated for a Hollywood Music in Media Award, HMMA, for Best Pop Song. Alana also landed an endorsement with the Daisy Rock Guitars, an LA-based guitar company, which boasts a roster of notable artists such as Avril Lavigne, Miley Cyrus, Norah Jones, The Bangles, Juana Jackson, Lisa Loeb, and other performers from the NBC's The Voice. Welcome, Alana, for coming on the show and spending some time with us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So let's give everybody a little bit of history about you. When did you start your singing career, and what got you started as a musical performer?
Well, I've sung ever since I was little. I think the first time I've ever sung on a stage was when I was 4 and we were on a cruise ship, and I got up there on stage and I put together a little song, and my parents said that they would buy me a new dress if I did it, because they didn't think I was going to do it, but I did, so I got a new dress out of it. And then I've probably been going to voice lessons since I was about 11. And I went to them for a few years, and then I took a break to focus more on acting, and then I got back into them when I was 13, and everything kind of took off from there.
And what do you attest to being your first big break in the music industry?
I think when Butterflies took off, that was probably my first big break, and I got noticed and a lot of notoriety and fans, so having that get so much attention was probably my big first break.
Now, tell us about the song we just heard, Dream Out Loud. What inspired the song, and what's it all about, really?
Well, my music producer for that one, Thomas, wrote that. He's part of OT Hit Factory, and so I've been working a lot with him for my new EP that's going to be coming out, and he wrote that and with one of his, like a few of his friends, and thought that'd be awesome first single for me, and, you know, to kind of come out with Strong After Butterflies and stuff to kind of show a more mature side of my voice. And so that and the music video is kind of about like accomplishing a goal and looking back on it and kind of saying, you know, to someone, like in the music video, I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it's about my friend Nine, how he has leukemia, and kind of our journey together as being good friends, and how he's always been there and supported me and wanting to submit me to a music contest. And he finally, he does, and he passes away, and then you see us on the beach standing there, and then you only see one set of footprints, and his image just kind of fades away, and then you see that he's long since passed, and I'm singing and doing what I love, so that's kind of what that represents.
Now, was that actually something that happened? I mean, did he really have leukemia? I mean, or is this just like
no.
a made-up thing?
No, our video, the video company that we've used before had actually made that up. So they're really, really special, and they're just very creative with coming up with very touching and really great plots. And so they had come up with that. He's actually still alive, so he's good and going strong.
Well, that's good, because I know if anybody sees that, it is a tear-jerking and very powerful and motivating video. That it's probably one of the most powerful ones I've seen in a long time. And just to know that you sang this song and it's coming from somebody. How old are you? 16 now?
I am, yeah.
So
17 in January.
So it's coming from a 16-year-old. That's just intense, and I really want people to go see that. How can people find your music and actually view that music video that we were just talking about?
Well, Dream Out Loud and some of my other covers and music videos that I've done are on my YouTube channel, AlanaLee21. And then links to all my channels and social media are on my website, AlanaLeeMusic.net, A-L-A-N-A-L-E-E Music.net.
And right before we go, also tell me about this EP coming out that you have.
Well, the EP is probably going to consist of about 5 or 6 songs, just kind of showing a more mature and edgy side of my music and my capabilities and kind of just how I've grown. So I'm just really excited to share that with everyone, and it has some awesome songs on it, and I helped write one of them. So we'll just see, and I'm just really excited to see all the feedback that I get on it, and see how everybody likes it, because I love them.
Well, thank you for coming on and sharing some time with us and talking about your music. And everybody out there, please go to her website, Alana Lee Music, AlanaLeeMusic.net. Thank you for coming on and spending some time with us talking about your music. I love watching your career grow, and I definitely want to be kept in the loop. And if you have more opportunities, please come back and spend some time with us.
I let myself. Aren't you ashamed?